It's happening.
We're
recording.
Okay. Hello. Welcome to. Oh. No. How dare you? Get out of my way. Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tugs Lurzel.
Stepping on me. I come to you from North Canton, Ohio, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Kaskaskia peoples.
And I'm coming to you from Detroit, Michigan, where I record on land belonging to the Ottawa, Ojibwe, Potawatomi, and Wyandot nations.
Yes. These are some of many nations that are still very much out here doing their thing, and we would like to acknowledge that. This is this is usually the show about scandals and scandalousness. But today it's a mini, and we're doing whatever the fuck we want.
Mm-hmm, doing that mini thing. It's pretty scandalous, my thing.
It's
political adjacent, at least.
Scandalo. I love it. Scandalo.
Before we get into the scandalo, I would first like to give a big shout out to our newest Patreon supporter, Stacey Ann. Thank you very much, Stacey Ann. You're the best.
She is. She's a baddie.
Simply the best. Yes. She is better than all the rest.
She is better than all the rest. Sorry, rest.
Do better, rest.
Thank you. Yeah, it needed to be said.
Yeah. So thank you so much for your support. It means so much to us, especially going into our sabbatical.
Yeah.
It really means so much to us to know that we will still have your support, even though we're taking a little break. And we will continue to have your support when we come back.
Yeah, it was so sabbatical. So unexpected when you said that, we have a new Patreon. I'm just like, wait, what? But we just, we're taking a break.
Yeah.
So it felt very encouraging. I'm like, okay, people still like us, still want to hear from us.
Exactly.
We still got it.
I also, before we get into my actual topic for today's minisode, I also want to mention that the drag ban in Tennessee that I mentioned last week in last week's episode has since been ruled unconstitutional by a Trump-appointed judge.
Yep.
Very exciting stuff. This judge said that the law was, quote, unconstitutionally vague and substantially overbroad, and, quote, and encouraged, quote, discriminatory enforcement. He went on to write that there were several reasons to believe the law was geared towards placing prospective blocks on drag shows, regardless of their potential harm to minors.
Imagine.
I know. So, yeah, this is great news. This is incredible news. It also really helps to prove the points that we made last week about the LGBTQ community's willingness to fight against injustice going forward, and the strength and the power that we have in knowing our history and knowing how to fight these kinds of laws now, thanks to our past and our history. Unfortunately, it doesn't really seem like this is going to be the end of this fight. I'm sure that this judge's decision is going to be appealed and it's going to move to a higher court, but at least for now, everyone can sort of rest easy for now. This law can no longer be enforced. Well, actually, it never went into place, because basically as soon as they tried to pull one over, it went to the courts. So it can't be enforced and hopefully never will.
Good.
Unfortunately, there is another law in Tennessee right now banning basically most gender-affirming care for trans people. This is horrific, completely despicable, and it is going through the courts right now. We don't know how it's all going to turn out, but it is going through the courts. So fingers crossed that we have a good outcome on that as well. Tennessee, Florida, Texas, Missouri.
Ohio.
Oh, it's a scary time.
Yeah, for sure.
But I should get into this mini here. I should do the mini thing. So we all know about the Stonewall Uprising and the importance of Stonewall to the gay rights movement and to the history of Pride and not just gay pride, but Pride Month and all of that. we have talked about Stonewall before on the show, obviously. We've never really done an actual story about Pride. We've never done an episode on Pride or on Stonewall. But any discussions about Pride or the gay rights movement tend to sort of somehow work Stonewall into the discussion. It's always top of mind when we're talking about Pride.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, there was another queer uprising 3 years before Stonewall that was just as incredible and just as powerful, but just doesn't really get much attention when we talk about queer history.
It's not as sexy.
It's a really incredible story. I think the issue was that it wasn't very well documented in the press. For some reason, the press just didn't care about this story. So it didn't really have like the nationwide impact that Stonewall did. But yeah, I'm going to talk about it today.
Cool.
So this is going to be just sort of like a quick, brief history of the Compton's Cafeteria Uprising of 1966. So in the mid-1960s, there were about 90,000 LGBTQ people living in San Francisco. living in San Francisco. That number came from like estimates from the police that they were guessing that there were about 90,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, living in San Francisco in the 60s. And while most of the city's cis white gay men tended to live in the Castro district, the city's transgender population was forced into a dangerous slum and red light district a few miles away called the Tenderloin District. While the entire LGBTQ community in San Francisco faced discrimination and violence and oppression in the 1960s, trans women in particular, not surprisingly, were really targeted by the police and exploitative landlords.
Mm.
A trans filmmaker named Susan Stryker said that the neighborhood was home to, quote, young people who maybe had been kicked out by their families and were living on the street, and trans people who could lose a job at any moment or not be hired, who wouldn't be rented to, who had to live in crappy residential hotels in a bad part of town, and who had to do survival sex work to support themselves. Tenderloin resident Susan Cook said, quote, police would give the people who were indeterminate gender the message that they belonged only in the Tenderloin, which at the time was a kind of gay ghetto, a very slummy gay ghetto. In fact, after arresting trans people in other parts of the city, police would either tell them that once they were released, they had to go to the Tenderloin district when they left, or the police would literally drive them to the Tenderloin and drop them off and just be like, this is where you belong. Don't leave this neighborhood.
Wow. That's really fucked up.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's so weird too. Like we've decided that this is your place.
Yeah.
But just because the police herded all of these trans people and drag queens and, you know, like homeless queer youth into this Tenderloin neighborhood on purpose, that didn't mean that once they were there, they left them alone.
Of course.
Far from it. Yes.
Yeah. Easy pickings.
Exactly. Yeah. They put them all in the same place so that they knew where they were when they wanted to fuck shit up. So police sweeps and raids of the neighborhood were super common, and trans women and drag queens were arrested for all kinds of made up crimes all the time. Loitering and obstructing the sidewalk were some of the most common offenses. You're obstructing the sidewalk.
Why is that even a thing? That's so fucked up. Yeah, it's just meant for police abuse.
Exactly. Yeah. Female walk impersonation.
Walk around me, bitch. Walk around. I know.
Yeah. Female impersonation under the three article rule was also a very common offense. Yeah.
Offense. Wink.
So in 2005, filmmaker Susan Stryker made this documentary about the uprising at Compton's Cafeteria called Screaming Queens. And for the film, she interviewed several Tenderloin residents and transgender women, including Amanda St. James, who said, quote, if we had lipstick on, if we had mascara on, if our hair was too long, we had to put it under a cap. If the buttons was on the wrong side, like a blouse, they would take you to jail because they felt it was female impersonation.
What?
Another trans... Yes. If the buttons are on the wrong side of my shirt, that makes it a blouse.
What does that even...
Because the blouse has the buttons are on the wrong, on the other side of the shirt.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, men's buttons are on a different side. It's
why are you so stupid. Obsessed with me? Would be my question to them. Like, why are you looking at where my buttons are?
Exactly. Ugh. Yeah. Another transgender woman named Tamara Ching said, quote, "The police could harass you at any time. They would ask you for pieces of ID. You had to have your male ID if you were born male and didn't go through a sex change. They would pat you down. And while they're patting you down, of course, they're feeling you up."
Wow. That's so fucked up.
Not surprisingly, So things came to a boiling point in the summer of 1966. I think this is a good place for us to take a little break.
Okay.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you. Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places. Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail. You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers. Cheers.
All right. So we are back. We had a lovely break.
Yes.
So Compton's Cafeteria was an all-night diner in the Tenderloin. It was actually a chain of diners throughout San Francisco, but they had a location in the Tenderloin, which became kind of like a refuge for these homeless queer youth and transgender women and drag queens and people that lived in the Tenderloin and needed some place to go to get off the streets. Compton's Cafeteria was clean. It was comfortable. It was well lit and the food was affordable.
Oh, wow.
And a gay night manager was tolerant of these people who would come in and spend hours just sitting there and smoking cigarettes and gossiping and waiting for their friends to come by and talk to them, even if all they ever ordered were 60-cent cups of coffee.
Yeah.
He kind of was like, it's okay. You know, this is one of the only places you can go at night. It was definitely a place that you would go really late at night because it was open 24 hours. Mm. So even after the bars closed, everyone was drunk and everyone would wander over to Compton's and just hang out all night long. But the diner chain's management didn't like that the Tenderloin location had become this late night hangout for drag queens and trans women and sex workers. The employees would often call the police at night on all these people to try and clear the place out. And late one hot August night, the people living in the Tenderloin had had enough. When a policeman tried to grab a drag queen sitting at a table in Compton's to try and get her out of there, she threw her coffee in his face.
Amazing.
And that was all it took for the whole restaurant to erupt into total pandemonium.
Yeah.
People flipped tables and threw cutlery, plates and glassware flew through the air. Sugar shakers crashed through plate glass windows and glass doors in the restaurant. Drag queens swung their purses at officers and hit them with their high-heeled shoes.
Wow.
And outside on the street, dozens of people were fighting back as police were trying to force them into paddy wagons. The crowd trashed a cop car and set it on fire, and they also set fire to a newsstand nearby.
I love it. We love to see it.
Yes, absolutely. Amanda St. James said, "We just got tired of it. We got tired of being harassed. We got tired of being made to go into the men's room when we were dressed like women.
Yeah.
We wanted our rights."
That's dangerous.
Yes. She went on to say, quote, "There was a lot of joy after it happened. A lot of them went to jail, but there was a lot of, I really don't give a damn. This is what needs to happen."
Yeah.
So the Stonewall Uprising in New York may be the official event that really kicked off the gay rights movement because it was so nationally well known. There was huge headlines across the country and everyone was like, well, if this is happening in New York, it could happen here too. And this is like the spark. But According to Susan Stryker, 3 years earlier, the Compton's cafeteria uprising was, quote, the transgender community's debut on the stage of American political history.
Mm.
She said it was the first known instance of collective, militant, queer resistance to police harassment in United States history.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
It's, I mean, like, yeah. Why do we not know about this?
I mean, because this is the United States of America.
Yeah. And it really was largely ignored by the press at the time. I think I don't know why. I'm going to just speculate that it may just be because it happened in the Tenderloin, and that was a neighborhood that most people in San Francisco didn't give a single fuck about.
Yeah.
And the police probably didn't want it, like, broadcast that they got their asses handed to them by a bunch of trans women and drag queens.
Yeah.
So
it's not a great look. Yeah. And that happening in New York, it's hard to hide because there's so many people.
Exactly. And, like, you know, even though that area where the Stonewall is like a very diverse neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though there are a lot of gay people there, it's diverse enough that, like, people saw what was going on.
Yeah. So it wasn't just a community.
Yeah. They couldn't keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
So yeah, the uprising was largely ignored by the press, and a city archivist said that most of the arrest records from the Tenderloin in those days have been, quote, disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super shady.
Yeah. When this trans filmmaker went to like research what happened at Compton's, like, there's very few records of what actually happened. Yeah. Today, no one actually knows even the exact date of the uprising. We know it was in August. We know it happened late at night on a hot night in August, but no one really knows the exact date. And the story might have just been lost to history entirely if Susan Stryker hadn't found a short article about it in an old program from San Francisco's first gay pride parade in 1972. She was looking through some LGBTQ archives in 1991 when she found this article titled Drag Queens Protest Police Harassment at Compton's Cafeteria. So she found this article in 1991. The article was from the first gay pride parade like program from 1972, but this happened in 1966. So even this article, which was short, was written what, 6 years after the fact? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of detail and recorded, like,
yeah, that's a shame. Records.
Yeah.
But it's by design, because they hit those files. Like, you would have a date and a time and, like, you know, a list of people who are involved, or at least who got scooped up that night.
Yeah.
But they want to play games.
Yeah.
And hide it.
She knew there was a story there, though, when she saw this article. She was like, I've got to find out what happened. She started looking for more information. And I watched this this documentary. It's like not even a full hour long. It's like 55 minutes or something. We'll put it in the show notes. I think you can find it on Amazon Prime. But she went through the Tenderloin and interviewed a lot of older trans women who lived there for a long time, and was just asking people, like, were you here when this happened? Do you remember this happening? And she found at least a couple of people who had firsthand knowledge of what, how it all played out and what went down. It's really interesting to watch. Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, at the time, even though the press pretty much ignored this uprising, it did really have a profound effect on the Tenderloin and the people in the Tenderloin. When restaurants in the neighborhood banned trans women from entering their restaurants afterwards, they were picketed. The trans people in the neighborhood were like, fuck you. This is our neighborhood. And they really raised hell.
Good.
And when Compton's refused to give up and let them in, the newly replaced plate glass windows in their restaurant were smashed again.
How mysterious.
Yes, exactly. There's no records of how this could have happened.
It was God's will, I heard.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. God, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Participants in the uprising suddenly felt empowered in a way that they really weren't used to at that point. And their activism became a constructive outlet for their frustrations with the city and with the cops. They staged a bunch of public demonstrations in the area looking for better conditions, and they worked with the city and the health department to form a center to connect trans people with medical care. They even started providing ID cards for trans people so that their chosen gender identity would be listed on their IDs so that they would have an easier time finding work and housing, which is a big deal at that time.
Massive. Yeah. Massive now.
Yeah, yeah. So the Comptons Tenderloin location started closing at midnight after this uprising.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's shitty.
And according to many of the trans women living there, living in the neighborhood at the time, they said that the neighborhood really felt basically forever changed, kind of in a good way in their mind, like that people really started realizing like we can have an impact. Like we can get shit done.
We are a collective. It's not just we're out here as individuals. No, our community is under threat. Let's band together.
Yeah. Yeah, they formed like a political action committee called Vanguard after this. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So the Comptons chain closed the Tenderloin location in 1972. I don't know if it just wasn't doing well after they like banned the people living in their neighborhood from coming in or what. But yeah, it ended up becoming a sex shop after this.
Okay.
But now today, finally, there is a historic marker highlighting the events of that late night in August of 1966. That marker probably wouldn't exist if it weren't for Susan Stryker and the work she did, like unearthing this story. That is the abridged history of the Comptons Cafeteria Uprising of 1966. I do want to say though, before we wrap it up, that in a quest for, I don't know, equal rights and respectability, cis white gay men have thrown queer people of color and trans people and drag queens under the bus for almost the entire history of the gay liberation movement. But what many of us tend to forget is that queer people of color and trans people and drag queens have always been at the forefront of that movement.
Yeah.
They're the ones going to battle with the police. They're the ones throwing the first bricks or bottles or cups of coffee.
Hmm.
But anytime a monument gets put up, anytime a movie is made about Stonewall, cis white men are centered as the hero of these stories every time.
Really
every
makes
fucking
you
time.
Think
yeah.
that maybe we exist in a construct of white supremacy. Yeah, I mean, it's good that people are hearing about these stories that really show the true origins of these movements. Because, like, why would it ever be white men at the beginning of anything? Yeah. Like, they follow, they copy, and they take credit. Like, that's always been the case. But I want to check out this documentary. Susan
Stryker. It's really
sounds
good.
Like a real one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that things are really scary right now.
Yeah.
But we as queer people have things so much better than our queer like ancestors did in the 60s. And we have drag queens and black trans women to thank for that.
Amen. Yeah.
Yeah. The end.
I'd like to believe that if like white queer men realized the origins of their movement, maybe they would have a little bit more respect and maybe they would do something differently.
I think it's happening little by little. I think that people are becoming more aware, especially as these stories are being told. And, I do think that it is little, there is a little movement being made in that direction.
Yeah.
And I think especially as queer history becomes such a hotbed or a hot, what's the word I'm looking for? Hot button issue.
Mm.
Like because queer history is being banned in all of these conservative states. Yeah.
A distraction.
I think young people. Yeah. But I think that young people are paying attention in a way that they never really have.
Yeah.
Specifically queer young people, I feel like it's been very easy for queer people to young queer people to sort of ignore queer history because things are different now and it doesn't feel as like detrimental. It doesn't feel as desperate, mm-hmm. but now suddenly it does. And I think that people are really paying attention and young people are paying attention and they're the ones who are really going to be like, oh, okay, we yeah. see what is really happening here and what has happened.
Yeah, I agree that young people are more aware of just everything.
Yeah.
And they are not taking kindly to us banning their books. They're just like, we see you, friends.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's just going to make us want to do it more. Like, don't you know? Like, this has never worked historically. But
I mean, honestly, like, let you know what I mean? Go ahead and ban the books.
Right?
Make a list of these books, and then people are going to buy these books in yes. a way that they never would have before.
Absolutely, yeah.
I feel like people are more likely to read the books that have been banned than
absolutely
before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the banned book list has put books on my radar that I bought.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you yeah. don't want me to read this one? Let me get
that means
a copy.
I should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Maybe. If you want to keep this out of my hands, that means this is important and I need to buy it.
But did you see that they banned the Bible in Utah?
Yes, in Utah. Yeah. Yeah, I did.
And also the Book of Mormon, it's next on the list for, they're going to put their eyeballs and be like, actually, but why is this shit in public schools? Like,
hello. Yeah. Why this?
Like, huh? Yeah. So it makes me really happy. And I hope the same happens in Florida. If you want to play stupid games, we can play stupid games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're gonna win some stupid prizes.
Yeah,
you wanna fuck around.
Yeah,
you're gonna find out.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, that was really good, and I hadn't heard of the Compton at all. But yeah, it's by design, and they hid the memories of it, the records of yeah, it. So it's
exactly.
Yeah, incredible. They tried it and we still found out.
I mean, they almost succeeded in yeah. like sweeping it under the rug too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just takes one nerd to come exactly. along and yeah. be like, wait just a second. I have the time for this.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it so much. but yeah, my drink is, I'm only drinking water, but it is now empty.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we are done. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzol.
Thank you to our new audio editor, Thomas. He's amazing. We cannot do this. Thomas. He has a fancy accent. And I feel fancy by I don't know, like osmosis. Like
association.
I feel there. That's the word. That's the word. Association. I'm over here talking biology for no reason. Yeah, he's great. We thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. A thousand thank yous.
A thousand thank yous. yeah. Bye, y'all.
That's it. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. And make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.